You are listening to the Dharma Ocean podcast. Spirituality is often presented as a journey of attainment, of progressing towards higher states of enlightened being. In this talk, Reggie challenges this notion. He says that true spirituality is actually a downward journey, into the unconscious, into the earth, into the grittiness of our humanity. This talk was originally given at a weekend retreat in Portland, Oregon in 2009.
Good evening, everybody. It's wonderful to be here together. That was a really interesting introduction. She mentioned how much I've changed. What was that like in the beginning? We've known each other 15 years, yeah. And one of the wonderful things about this work, and particularly this lineage, is the opportunity to be together and to know one another over a long period of time. Often we have friends, people we've known, and maybe we have a few over, you know, a lifetime, and it's obviously one of the most, in a way, moving and gratifying parts of being alive is to know a person over a period of time. But when you know people within a Dharma framework, it's different, because the level of ongoing openness and intimacy over that period is far beyond what we usually have with other people. And the person sitting in my seat gets to see his or her students change. And they change much more fundamentally and rapidly than I do. I think it's the most fundamental motivation for being a teacher, is you get to work with people at that level. In the beginning, there's a lot of inspiration, and you know, on their part, that there's a journey they want to make, and then they feel that they found a place and they found a lineage where they can do it. But they're not very aligned with who they really are. And you sit there and you look, and you can see their beauty, and you see their possibility, but they don't. And your job really is to speak for them, speak for their deeper self, and to represent their deeper self back to them, and to be an advocate, to be a protector of that self, to be a protector of their journey. And most of all, you know, I think the whole point of the Dharma is for us to learn to live from such a deep level in ourselves that we begin to see the wheres and the why for of everything that happens in our lives, and we begin to see that in other people. And there's a sense of appreciation and relaxation and inclusion for others, meaning that we can sit with them and we can look at them and we can hold everything they are. And that's what love is. Love is being present to everything another person is, and not judging, not pulling back, not freaking out, not, you know, laying your own stuff on them. So that's the work of a person in my seat, is indeed to soften up and to learn really what it means to love another person. And it's a powerful journey. The teacher that I studied with, Chogyam Trungpa, his expectation for me and for his other early students was that all of us would one day do what he did, which was the way he loved us and the way he made room for everything that we were and unlocked the deeper person that maybe we didn't even know existed. And his expectation is that we would do the same thing, which is why I'm doing this work. And my expectation for Beth and for the other people that I've been working with for a long time is the same thing, that it's to take the opportunity and the challenge presented by all the people that she works with and my other students work with, and through the process learn where we hold back, learn where we judge, see how afraid we are just to open ourselves to another person, and eventually to grow into being able to love them. You know, we say often with children that when they are not loved, when they're not seen and they're not loved, they can't grow. But my experience is with myself and everybody I work with that it's also true of us. We need to have one person in our life who sees us and loves us for what we are. And sadly, in this world, many of us have never had that experience ever, not even once. But the interesting thing is that when you do have it, when it happens in your life, then everything changes. It only needs to begin to happen, and then somehow it activates this very deep spiritual growth that is part of every human being. So I retired actually from traveling about 20 years ago, but somehow at a certain point in your life, when you've received so much, you know, when the universe has given you your life back, and when you begin to feel that there's a blessing that runs through everything you do, and you meet people who help you, at a certain point, you really can't, you're not in charge anymore of your own life, and you have to offer it, and you have to offer what you know and what you've experienced and the love that you have. You have to. And that's also part of our lineage, and you know, my students are pretty clear on that that's the deal. You want to live completely. Do you want to become fully who you are? That's great. But when you do it, you're going to have to let go of everything and be available, you know, to what the world wants. This weekend we're going to talk about Tibetan Tantra. And really we're going back to India because the tantric traditions all came from India, and what Tibet had was of Indian origin. So we're really talking about the Indian tradition, you know, as it was kept alive in Tibet. But inseparable from that conversation is the very profound altruism that has to be part of every genuine spirituality. It's interesting that when we begin to follow a spiritual path and we begin to practice, initially we find that we are greatly helped by it. We're helped by our teachers and our practices and our community, our Sangha members, Sangha brothers and sisters. And, you know, we begin to feel like things are going very, very well for us in a certain way. I mean, yes, life is difficult and life is painful. And we have a lot of, you know, unresolved traumas, you know, as humans. It's just our life. And we're always, you know, coming upon new things that we have to work with and resolve. But we know how to do it. As, you know, practitioners, at a certain point, life becomes very, very workable. At that point, I think, you know, we begin to feel very much on top of things. And then an interesting thing happens, which is that we begin to realize that the blessing of our life actually ultimately is not really about us. And it's not as if the universe said, you know, here's this really great person and, you know, everybody else is struggling and drowning. Just because this person is so great, you know, they're just so wonderful that we're going to make a special exception. And we're going to deliver all these blessings to this really exceptional human. And we begin to feel kind of, you know, proud of ourselves. And then we start to realize, you know, we look around us, we look at other people, and we learn more about ourselves through our practice. And we begin to find out, actually, we are not any different from anybody else. That all of us actually share the exact same human situation. You know, at one time or another, our suffering may be greater or less than another person, or our confusion may be greater or lesser. But the overall situation is really all for all of us, and there are no exceptions. You know, there are no spiritual teachers that have exceeded the human condition. And in our religions, we have people who feel that they have to appear to be more than human. And that's the pressure of society and the pressure of organized religion. But the fact of the matter is, you know, everybody's the same. Whatever robe you're wearing or however high your throne, we're all sitting on the earth together in a circle. That's just the deal. That's the way it is. And, you know, we begin to figure it out, and we begin to figure out that, as Trungpa Rinpoche once said to me, why do you think I'm giving these teachings to you? The interesting thing about him was, whatever question you asked, he always knew what the real question was. It was very odd, actually. You would ask a question, and then he would respond in a way that has nothing to do with the question you'd asked, often. But he answered the question you actually had, that you hadn't quite figured out that you wanted to ask. So on that particular day, I was feeling proud of myself and happy to be his student and, you know, really rather satisfied with all the practices. And so his question to me was, well, why do you think I'm giving this to you? Why do you think I'm sweating and dying so you can have these teachings? Do you know how what a difficult student you are? You know, you don't get it right. I have to tell you 15 times, and you still don't get it right. You have no idea what you're doing. Why do you think I'm doing this? I mean, he never said that, but he could have. And I said, you know, I knew I was in trouble. I said, because you want to help me? And he said, so you can help other people. You know, if I teach you, then you can help other people. And the way the universe works is, the more you give your life over to the continual journey and undoing of a spiritual path, the more the universe is going to ask you to let go of any sense of yourself and to relinquish, you know, all of your narcissism and all of your obsessive concern with your own particular happiness and success. And the more you let go, the more the universe is going to use you. And it will use you. And you'll be like a conduit, like an aqueduct, because the universe needs humans as aqueducts to bring the water of life to others. So the spirituality thing is so interesting. It's so double-edged. The more you let go, the more you have to let go. And then if you let go some more, then even a little bit of holding on is not appreciated by the universe. And there's this kind of strange collaboration between our inner process and our outer circumstances such, and I, you know, I know everybody here knows what I'm talking about. The more practice you do, the more incendiary our lives become. The more practice we do, the more the karma of our lives speeds up. And situations that 10 years ago or 5 years ago in our lives, we could have just cruised through. Some self-deception, some little attempt to manipulate somebody else, some retraction, some unwillingness to engage a situation. All of a sudden, it doesn't work anymore. And it not only doesn't work, it's like detonating a nuclear bomb in your face. And you don't have any choice, you change. Trungpa Rinpoche once said, if you can avoid the spiritual journey, by all means do so. Because once you enter, it's like entering the jaws of a crocodile. And he didn't say alligator. And I want to make an important distinction between crocodiles and alligators. Alligators are animals. Crocodiles come from another planet. Crocodiles are like alligators times 10. And, you know, their teeth all point backward. So once you get into the mouth of a crocodile, that's it. You're toast. So his thing was, that's what spirituality is like. Once you enter the journey, the teeth of reality are all pointing backwards. And you're not going to be able to exit that way. The only way you're going to get out is that way, where you go into the jaws of reality. And the thing about the spiritual journey is you don't realize they're jaws until after you're in, and it's too late. And you go into the jaws, you're chewed up, And, you know, we're chewed up by life. We're chewed up by our practice. Meantime, things are opening up and we feel like we're going from universe to universe. We feel that the whole world is changing around us. Our sense of appreciation, our sense of the vividness of life, the beauty of the world around us, our sense of the joy of breathing and, you know, drinking water and, you know, seeing a human face. I mean, all of this is what we've always wanted. But the work is the jaws. And we're chewed up and we feel, I'm being chewed up. This is really bad. I don't think I can really handle it. Little do we realize that after we're chewed up is when the journey begins. Then down the gullet we go. And it's very, very dark often for us. It's claustrophobic. And it's as if we're being deliberately worked on. The claustrophobia and the darkness is something that we couldn't have endured prior to being chewed up. But after we're chewed up, we're tenderized, we're kind of masticated in such a way that when we encounter darkness, we can actually be with it. And claustrophobia and the sense of not being able to move. And down we go, and then we feel, this is it. This like, I'm Jonah, I'm in the whale. There can't be anything worse than this. You mind if I keep going with this? And then we hit the stomach of the crocodile. And, of course, there's a lot of acid in there. And our sense of identity seems to be in a continual state of distress and compromise. And all of the things that we've been doing to get by all of a sudden are being digested. And we're not sure who it's being digested by, but it's being digested and breaking down. And we begin to really feel that we've completely lost our life. You know, we don't even know who we are anymore. And then we keep going through the intestines, and then we find ourselves in a very interesting place where we are mixed up with all the shit of this crocodile, meaning that we are not separate from our own darkness anymore. You know, we can take all of the negative things that we see in people around us or people we've heard about, and we begin to discover at a certain point in the journey that we actually have everything. We have the murderous hatred. We would, under certain circumstances, we could easily kill somebody else. We are so hungry. Under certain circumstances, we commit any crime of greed that you can come up with. We're so lonely, we would throw a whole life over to have a moment of intimacy with somebody else. I mean, we have within us, even if we seem to be very decent and well-behaved people, and we seem to be better in a certain sense, you know, morally better than a lot of other people, at a certain point on the journey, we realize it's not true. It isn't true. We are human, and we are human in a way that everybody else is human. And it doesn't matter whether we're talking about kings or queens, or we're talking about beggars or prostitutes, we're talking about criminals, we're talking about Mother Teresa with all of her doubts that came up, you know, toward the end of her life about whether God even exists. We are all these people. We're mixed up in all the shit, and at a certain point, we have to give in. And the whole journey of spirituality is suddenly up for grabs. All we know is that we've been through this horrendous breaking down of our arrogance and our smugness and our narcissism and our sense of self. And it's been a long journey. And then we come out the other end. And it's interesting that we started up high, and we end it down low. And the crocodile shits, and we go into the earth, and we get mixed into the earth. And that is where we truly begin to discover what life is. And that's where Tantra is found. Strangely enough, it's found in the raw human emotions. It's found in the meltdowns. It's found in the incredibly painful disruptions we have in our relationships with people we love. It's found in the earth under us. So we can talk about this in Buddhist terms if you like. The important point, though, is that spirituality is, as it's viewed in the tantric tradition, it's not about becoming somebody higher or bigger or better, strangely enough. It's not a self-improvement technique. It's not about figuring out a way to get rid of the unwanted parts of our personality. It's not about becoming peaceful. It's not about becoming kind and loving to everybody, although that is the end result. Tantra is about letting go of all our attempts to change ourselves. It's about a radical self-acceptance and radical, not even self-acceptance, because, you know, like if we accept ourselves, there's a person here who's accepting the person there. In other words, we're still up there looking at this person going, I accept you. The Tantra is much more radical than that. It's surrendering, actually, to everything that we are and being willing to be one with it. You know, in this day and age, because of all of the knowledge that has arisen, particularly within Western European culture, American culture, about human beings, we have become, and I'm talking about historical knowledge, you know, knowledge of the history of religions, our political understanding of how religions work, the open communication that has enabled us to see the flaws and the shadows and the dark side of our organized religions big time, knowledge of psychology and seeing how really often what goes for spirituality is simply unresolved Oedipal conflicts that we try to play out with people that we regard as authorities. I mean, it's actually depressing when you put together all of the knowledge that we have in modern culture about religions and spirituality and how they work, which was not has never been available in the world up until, you know, the modern period, not in a wide way. It's very depressing. And you might feel it's that, you know, as many people have concluded, there is no such thing as spirituality. But the impact is incredibly positive when viewed from a tantric point of view, because the impact of all of the knowledge that has arisen and all looking under the, you know, carpets and in the closets and behind the scenes of spirituality and, you know, of ourselves and of our traditions has forced us to abandon wishful thinking about being better people in many cases. We're finally beginning to realize that the whole project of becoming somebody different and somebody better is bogus. It's actually a lie. This is a tantric point of view. And that what we have to do, instead of living up to the person that we think we could be, we have to live down to the person we are already. It's down, 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 down into the darkness of the body, down into the darkness of the unconscious, down into the darkness of the earth. Because that's where the answers lie, and that's where the deepest self lies, and that's where the sacredness of the universe is really found, in the earth. Of course it's found in the earth. I mean, where else could it possibly be found? Up in space? You know, the earth has given birth to everything that is. And of course the answers are there. They're not out in some distant, you know, galaxy.
Download more of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Our music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Kechog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.